making TV special.
Donuts. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means.
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
From the new record Dear Science, that's Golden Age. Just trying to stay positive for you here. This is the B-side of episode 94 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you 7:11 in the evening. It's Thursday, October 9th, 2008. And on these B-side episodes, we basically play catch-up, clean-up, and try and hit all the news that we're not able to cram into the last episode. So, it's going to be a lot. and there's going to be even more tomorrow. And so I thank all you guys out there checking out the podcast, checking out the show. Hit me up on IM or Skype or Yahoo or MySpace or Dig or any of those with Media Monarchy as your keyword. And again, these B-sides you can only get by subscribing to the podcast. You won't hear them on Portland Radio Authority or on Revere Radio Network, at least as of now. But anyway, we're going to be digging back and picking up some of the stuff that we missed, like I said. And so where I left it, I believe, at the end of 94, I just kind of gave a cursory glance to this article from Alternet. With all eyes on the bailout, House passed a $1 trillion defense bill. So Wednesday, this is again going back to the last week of September, the House passed a mammoth defense bill by a 392-39 vote. It's expected to clear the Senate with little difficulty. It was part of a $1 trillion stopgap measure to keep programs running through next March, allowing lawmakers to skip town without passing a final budget. The Associated Press reports, quote, the legislation came together in a remarkably secret process that concentrated decision-making power in the hands of a few lawmakers. In keeping with the tradition of recent years, Bush held a gun to his own head and threatened to pull the trigger if his demands weren't met. According to the AP, quote, to earn President Bush's signature rather than a veto, House and Senate negotiators dropped several provisions he opposed. They include a ban on private interrogators in U.S. military detention facilities and what would have amounted to congressional veto power over a security pact with Iraq. In other words, Congress also maintained recent tradition, swearing not to give Bush a blank check and then whipping out their pens and signing a blank check. The number that the House sent to the Senate for quote-unquote defense, $612 billion for the coming year, is eye-popping. Imagine a stack of $612,000 million bills, quite a pile. But the number's a sham. The budget calls for $68.6 billion for the occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan in 2009. War costs this year totaled $182 billion, according to the Federation of American Scientists. So, the House passed a spending measure 11 months after George W. Bush vetoed a bill, one passed with a lot of bipartisan support that would have added $7 billion measly dollars per year to the state children's health insurance program, covering 4 million more uninsured children. You'd be hard-pressed to find a clearer sign of national psychosis. Now, of course, the update to that: CQPolitics.com, Senate clears defense authorization bill. So again, like we said, masters of misdirection. While we're looking at the bailout slash rescue, they bust out a multi-billion dollar defense bill. Trillions, billions, quadrillions. It's all zeros and ones and debt. Money as debt. But we're going to shift gears and look at some of the latest dealing with the anthrax attacks, or Amerithrax, if you like. So posted up from Saturday, September 27th, anthrax panel reviews honest mistakes and email boasts. So first, from the International Herald Tribune, Single Bullet Specter wants details of anthrax investigation. A month after the FBI declared that a U.S. Army scientist was the anthrax killer of 2001, leading members of Congress are demanding more information about the seven-year investigation, saying they do not think that the Bureau has proven its case. In a letter sent to Robert Mueller, director of the FBI, Democratic leaders of the House Judiciary Committee said that, quote, important and lingering questions remain that are crucial for you to address, especially since there will never be a trial to examine the facts of the case. The scientist, Bruce Ivins, committed suicide in July, and Mueller is likely to face demands for additional answers about the anthrax case when he appears before the House and Senate, which he did. So my conclusion at this point is that it's very much an open matter, said Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, top Republican on the Senate committee, said of the strength of the case against Ivins. There are some very serious questions that have yet to be answered and need to be made public. So if we jump to the Washington Times, anthrax case to be reviewed by panel. So, speaking to the panel. Or rather, FBI Director Mueller told lawmakers that an independent panel will review the science that the Bureau relied on to conclude a troubled Army microbiologist carried out the anthrax attacks, saying, quote, "We're in discussions with and are going to request the National Academy of Sciences review the work that was done in the course of this investigation." But as I say, the National Academy is an independent entity and will be conducting a review. So he has to keep pointing out how independent it is. And that's usually not very reassuring. If we jump to georgewashington.blogspot.com, the FBI's mail sorting theory doesn't add up. The FBI claims that mail sorting equipment crushed the killer anthrax in the letters to Senators Daschle and Leahy down to a fine powder. Is that possible? Well, the anthrax spores in the Daschle letter were 1.5 to 3 microns, according to the Washington Post. Now, there are 25,400 microns in an inch. Mail sorting equipment is generally built to handle letters at least a quarter of an inch thick. And again, what he's basically breaking down is there's no fucking way. And when Jumptown, on the other hand, the LA Times hints at a more likely explanation. Since the early 1990s, U.S. Army scientists at Dugway Proving Ground in Utah have made small quantities of weapons-grade anthrax that is virtually identical to the powdery spores used in the bioterrorist attacks that have killed 5 people, government sources say. So, was it Fort Detrick, or was it Dugway Proving Ground in Utah? So, if we jump to the aforementioned LA Times, scientist concludes honest mistake about weaponized anthrax. An acclaimed government scientist who assisted the federal investigation of the anthrax mailing said that he erred 7 years ago when he told top Bush administration officials that material he examined probably had been altered to make it more deadly. The scientist, Peter B. Jarling, J-A-H-R-L-I-N-G, had observed anthrax spores with the aid of an electron microscope at the government's biological warfare research facility at Fort Detrick, Maryland. Quote, "I believe I made an honest mistake," Jarling said in response to questions emailed to him for this article, adding that he had been overly impressed by what he thought he saw under the microscope, saying, quote, "I should never have ventured into this area." So, again, the aforementioned Leahy, this from ABC, Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Senator Patrick Leahy told FBI Director Robert Mueller during testimony before his committee that he did not believe Army scientist Bruce Ivins acted alone in the 2001 anthrax attack, saying, quote, "I believe there are others involved, either as accessories before or accessories after the fact. I believe that there are others out there. I believe there are others who could be charged with murder." And if we move to the New York Times, these all slowly kind of tie together. Anthrax case affidavits add to bizarre portrait of suspect. A judge unsealed a new batch of court documents in the anthrax case, filling in further details of the bizarre behavior of Ivins, the Army scientist who the FBI has said carried out the anthrax attacks. So last September, according to a sworn statement from an FBI agent, Dr. Ivins sent himself an exuberant email message under the heading, "Finally, I know who mailed the anthrax." He did not identify the perpetrator, but said he was close to assembling the final proof. "I'm not looking forward to everybody getting dragged through the mud, but at least it'll all be over," Dr. Ivins wrote, adding, "I should have been a private eye," and signing the message, Bruce.
The Army scientist accused of carrying out the 2001 anthrax attacks emailed himself in 2007 saying he knew who the killer was. That's according to court documents unsealed Wednesday. Bruce Ivins apparently sent the email on September 7th, 2007. In the email, Ivins says, yes, I finally know who mailed the anthrax letters in the fall of 2001. I've pieced it together. However, the email did not say who Ivins thought was the anthrax killer. Ivins killed himself in July just as prosecutors prepared to charge him in the mailings to kill 5 people and sicken more than a dozen others. Ivins' attorney says his client was innocent and would have been cleared had the case gone to trial. However, the FBI investigation concluded that Ivins, and Ivins alone, was responsible for the attacks. Ivins worked at Fort Detrick in Maryland and had access to the deadly strain of anthrax used in the 2001 attacks. Carlotta Bradley, The Associated Press.
And you can pick up more from the Washington Post, as well as Associated Press and Raw Replay, about Ivan's emailing himself about saying he knew who the anthrax killer was. So again, just adding on the bizarre layers. If we jump to an article on truthout.org, anthrax case stays open. Why did the FBI let the Fort Detrick scientists investigate themselves? The congressional anthrax hearings on September 16th and 17th revealed that public pressure is keeping the doors open in the anthrax case. So again, the aforementioned Arlen Specter was furious at Mueller for his unwillingness to assure them that Congress would have a role in determining the panel's composition. Meanwhile, new evidence shows just how deeply wrong ABC and Washington Post reporters have been over the years on their coverage of the anthrax attacks. They can't have it both ways. Either they made repeated mistakes by relying on their sources, or several people deliberately lied in order to advance war on Iraq. So, in his recent book, Taking Heat, former White House Secretary Ari Fleischer wrote that Bush was more shook up by the anthrax attacks than by any other event. White House officials repeatedly pressured Mueller to prove it was a second wave assault by Al-Qaeda or Iraq. After days of provocative statements designed to scare the American people, Cheney himself believed that he had been exposed to anthrax. Although the test results were negative, October 18, 2001 was the moment when Cheney decided to withdraw to an undisclosed location and carry biodefense protection during all of his mysterious travels. We jump to the Detroit Free Press. FBI won't release documents on anthrax suspect. The FBI is declining to release at least 15,000 pages of documents related to the now-deceased prime suspect in the anthrax attacks, despite lingering suspicions that the Bureau has accused the wrong man. We jump to the Washington Times. This is an interesting one, and this will wrap up our anthrax updates. Mailmen may deliver anti-anthrax drugs. If there is ever another anthrax attack, the letter carrier may deliver your antibiotics. Federal health officials are beginning a project in Minneapolis, St. Paul, where we had just all that great RNC police state action. Starting again, federal health officials are beginning a project in Minneapolis, St. Paul to let letter carriers stockpile a personal supply of emergency antibiotics so they are protected and ready to deliver aid to the rest of the city at a moment's notice. These letter carriers are being asked to put their lives on the line to help their communities, Health and Human Services Secretary Michael Levitt said. By ensuring they are protected first, the carriers can be ready on short notice to take to the streets. The project aims to overcome a big hurdle of emergency planning. The government has much drugs stockpiled in case of future bioterrorism, but few ways to get them quickly to panicked citizens. Levitt noted that if someone possibly has inhaled anthrax, the chances of survival are best if antibiotic treatments begin within 48 hours. I feel better already. If we shift gears to presidential selection 08. Now, of course, we've already had another debate, but we'll get to that tomorrow. But first, Selection 08, debates, rebates, horseshit, and more. First, from the DPA, Obama-Kane clash over Iran-Iraq in first debate. That's my headline. Obama and McCain clashed in their first debate over the war in Iraq and whether the next person to occupy the White House should meet with Ahmadinejad. The two candidates disagreed sharply over the future course in Iraq, with Obama pitching his plan to set a time frame for yada yada bullshit. They're the same. They quibble over the fine details. But they're both for the global war on terror fraud. And you know that. Now, one interesting, bizarre thing, this from Op-Ed News. It really seems like McCain, Mr. loses temper, hot-blooded old man, grumpy old man. It really sounds like he says horseshit during the first debate.
Senator McCain appears resistant. He even said the other day that he would not meet potentially with the Prime Minister of Spain. because he's he wasn't sure whether they were aligned with us. I mean, Spain is a NATO ally.
Of course.
If we can, Spain is a NATO ally.
Of course.
If we can, Spain is a NATO ally.
Of course.
If we can meet with our friends, I don't know how we're going to lead the world in terms of dealing with critical issues like terrorism.
So there's a couple different videos, and the best one, it does really seem like even the audience kind of goes, he's kind of muttering under his breath, horseshit. But yeah, old man hasn't realized that mics are usually live. Now, something we did get to hit on episode 94 is, of course, about criticizing Obama in Missouri. We'll send you to jail. We covered Matt Blunt, governor of Missouri, basically decrying the, quote, police state tactics of the Obama campaign. We have one also from Kurt Nimmo, tell the truth about Obama in Missouri and go to jail. In Missouri, if you lie about Barack Obama, the cops may arrest you. Quote, the effort appeared to be part of a move by the Obama campaign to block advertisements to which it objects. The campaign also sent threatening letters to several news agencies in Pennsylvania and Ohio demanding that they stop airing ads exposing Obama's gun stance, according to the NRA. That coming from WorldNet Daily. Never mind, Obama is a gun grabber who claims to support the Second Amendment. Now, getting into some dirt. This from Raw Story and many other places, such as Infowars.com, Raw Replay, Ring of Fire Radio. It's the man Mike Papantonio, but it's going to be some other people as well. So, Fox trying to cover up McCain's role in the Keating Five. Now, of course, this is going to bubble up more and more as we get now within less than a month of the phony WWF stage match. They're going to start busting out the big guns, so they're going to start busting out the Keating Five shit, and they're going to start busting out the You Were Born in Kenya shit, or the William Ayers Weather Underground shit. However, here's the Keating Five shit. The Keating Five scandal and John McCain's role in it has received relatively little mention in presidential campaign coverage, and at least one Fox News host seems dedicated to keeping it that way. Appearing on Fox and Friends, radio host Mike Papantonio tried to remind viewers about McCain's intervention with federal regulators on behalf of real estate mogul Charles Keating, who was trying to avoid regulators of a savings and loan he owned during the SNL crisis of the 1980s. Fox and Friends' Steve Ducey told Papantonio to pipe down, called him rude, and demanded he cut it out. The show producer could be overheard saying, "Cut his mic." As Papantonio tries one last time to explain the details of the Keating Five scandal, Ducey again cuts him off. This ain't the History Channel.
Our story this morning, John McCain has suspended his campaign to focus on the economy, and right now not going forward with the debates until something is hammered out. Is this a sign of leadership or political maneuver? Joining us right now, we got radio talk show host Michael Reagan and Mike Papantonio. Guys, good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Michael, let me start with you. I was reading in the New York papers today, some Democratic insiders are calling this a brilliant move on John McCain's part. They say, quote, going back to Washington is what presidents do. He is acting like a leader. What do you say, Michael?
Well, I'll tell you this. It's a sign of weakness is what it is. McCain wanting to suspend his campaign is saying, I don't want to debate. Look, here's the problem.
They will do a debate. They're just postponing it for right now.
I understand. Right now, the reason he wants to postpone it is because the economy is such an important issue. He understands that right now, by margin of, for every two people, one person thinks the GOP is responsible for this tanking
economy. Mike, right now, the debate of Friday night is supposed to be about foreign policy, not the economy.
I understand that he has to solve the economy issue because the American public holds the GOP responsible. They hold him responsible, Bush responsible. He's in deep water by the polls.
Okay, Michael Reagan, if Barack Obama wants to do so much for the economy, why doesn't he go to his day job and work in the U.S. Senate? John McCain's going to do that while Barack Obama continues debate prep and shows up at the White House.
Well, what's interesting is Barack Obama has a name piece of legislation to solve the problem. People need to remember that Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid have been in charge of Washington for 2 years. They have done absolutely nothing. It's their friends that ended up making tens of millions of dollars off of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, Franklin Raines, Jamie Gorelick, Jim Johnson. You can go through the list of these people.
Sure.
I think what America wants is somebody to make the perp walk. Listen, when Ken Lay did what he did to Enron, he ended up going to jail. When WorldCom cooked the books, Ken Evers ended up going to jail. Right now, we're being asked to pay $700 billion, but nobody's going to jail. Yeah. Everybody's going having a great time. America doesn't want to bail out the Jim Cramers of the world.
Hey Michael, think back about another purple walk that should have taken place. That's where John McCain was involved with the Charles Keating Five scandal.
Mike. Let's go back to the 1980s. Michael.
You know what? Because it's about bailout.
Michael,
it's the same thing the Republicans are doing now.
That's why Keating was back in the 1980s.
That's why Keating is important. Has everything to do with what's happening today.
Antonio,
Keating.
I knew you guys were bringing this. That's the 1980s. We're now in the 2008.
Right.
Welcome to the presidential campaign.
Exactly,
and the fact
the
is
same.
That, excuse me. John McCain did not walk away with $90 million. We told him to put that $40 million. He didn't walk away with $75 million. He didn't walk. Excuse me.
McCain, you are rude. Let him talk.
He did not walk away with millions and millions of dollars.
Oh, really?
John McCain
did.
Did John McCain make a mistake? Absolutely.
Three people went to prison in the Keating event. Here's what happened. Here's the quick news.
This is not the History Channel.
Surprise.
Right, we're going to end it right there. We thank you very much, guys, for doing this.
McCain folks may know something I don't about how effective these ads will be, but strategically, it's important to note that this guilt by association lowball opens the way for a return volley. And in the middle of an economic crisis, if the McCain campaign is opening the door to shady associations, don't we go instantly to the Keating Five?
And now to Washington, D.C. and government. Hearings begin this week into what has already been called a major congressional scandal. It involves the $500 billion savings and loan bailout. It is about charges that five U.S. senators tried to protect one SNL owner who had contributed to their political campaigns.
John McCain was one of those five U.S. senators. Now he calls the entire episode a, quote, very unhappy period in his life. When Chicago Mayor Richard Daley first heard the McCain-Resco ad this week, he said, quote, when you start throwing mud is going to start being thrown at you, and it's going to be sticking. Timing-wise, I think it is fair to say that John McCain's full stop to his presidential effort today comes as he found his campaign in perhaps quite a vulnerable place. Joining us now is Matt Welch, who is the editor-in-chief of the libertarian publication Reason Magazine. He's also the author of McCain, Myth of a Maverick. Matt, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tell us about the Keating Five. Who was Charles Keating, and what was his connection to John McCain?
Charles Keating was a freak of nature, a 6'5" former Navy pilot turned anti-obscenity crusader, and most importantly for our discussion, he was John McCain's first single most important political backer when McCain dropped into the state of Arizona for the first time of his life and ran for Congress. He was responsible for about one-third of McCain's campaign fundraising for his initial congressional career and introduced him to sort of the rich society of booming Phoenix, Arizona, at a time when McCain needed all connections that he could get. McCain ended up having quite a long and very close relationship with Keating, to the point of traveling to his resort in the Bahamas 9 or 10 times on Keating's private jet. Keating was the owner of American Continental Corporation, which owned Lincoln Savings, which was incidentally my first bank. And back in the 80s, there was a real estate boom. Sounds kind of familiar. There was a lot of new financial instruments that not everyone quite understood. Interest rates were low. A lot of eerie similarities to our situation right now. And when the worm turned, as all housing bubbles and other bubbles inevitably do, Lincoln Savings was the single biggest culprit of the entire episode. When it went belly up, it cost taxpayers $3 billion alone. Keating spent 5 years in the federal pen, and 20,000 pensioners lost their life savings.
You mentioned the real estate boom, the new financial instruments that people didn't necessarily understand, the multi-billion dollar taxpayer bailout of the institution. There are a lot of similarities here. What about what John McCain got in trouble for? What his association with Keating was more than just personal.
Yes. In 1987, five senators, John McCain, Alan Cranston, Desi Kinsini, and Don Riegel, and McCain, all met with federal regulators who were investigating Charles Keating and Lincoln Savings for a variety of violations, some of them quite serious and criminal. They met with regulators on two separate occasions saying basically, hey, can you hurry up your investigation? What's the status of it? Those kind of meetings were very, very unusual. The regulators, investigators, felt pressured, and they immediately turned around and and reported that to the House and the Senate right at the time that the savings and loans were going belly up in the late 80s. These meetings happened in 1987, but the savings and loans really became sort of a crisis in 88, 89. Right about that time, these stories percolated of these improper meetings, and so there was a super long Senate ethics investigation into those five senators to see whether or not they delayed the investigation into Lincoln's savings and therefore delayed justice happening to the people who suffered under Keating's misrule. Eventually, they came out and basically slapped John McCain and John Glenn on the wrist, accusing them of poor judgment and nothing else. The other three senators received more serious smacks in the behind, if you will. McCain was the only one to remain in the Senate for more than 6 years. Three eventually did not run for re-election. I think John Glenn did. And McCain, which he's described as the worst, lowest point of his life, lower than even the his prison time in Hanoi, he became a big reformer of the campaign finance system, which got him in trouble in the first place.
Matt Welch, editor-in-chief of Reason Magazine.
I created an appearance of impropriety by attending a meeting with four other senators with four regulators.
Charles Keating, a millionaire banker who has come to embody the savings and loan scandal, was led off in handcuffs today.
Hearings begin this week into what has already been called a major congressional scandal. It involves the $500 billion savings and loan bailout. It is about charges that five U.S. senators tried to protect one SNL owner who had contributed to their political campaigns.
Never before have five senators been accused of intervening with federal regulators to help a campaign contributor.
Keating and his associates gave a total of $1.4 million to the senators. The senators then pressured former regulator Edwin Gray to go easy on Keating. Keating has become a symbol of the worst financial scandal in U.S. history and the worst ethics scandal in the history of the Senate.
He was also a high-powered McCain constituent and friend.
It was a very, very close personal relationship. Family spent a lot of time together. They traveled so often together with the Keating family, flying to their place in the Bahamas.
There were direct business ties as well. Cindy McCain had a major stake in a Keating real estate development. William Black was one of the lead investigators at the meeting.
Senator McCain was unique among the five senators in having a direct financial conflict of interest involving direct investments.
Former regulator Black is unforgiving.
On judgment, ethics, and truthfulness, he failed this test as badly as you can fail.
And that's pretty much your crash course in John McCain and the Keating Five scandal. Now, all those full videos and clips are available. They're all posted up, all up under the old Selection 08 debates, rebates, horseshit, and more. Now we're going to hit It's Always Disturbing. Remember the Alamo, quote-unquote cult leader arrested for quote-unquote child sex. This from Wikinews. Controversial evangelist leader Tony Alamo was arrested in Flagstaff, Arizona, and faces charges related to child sex abuse allegations at the Tony Alamo Christian Ministry Organization. Alamo has previously been convicted on charges of tax evasion. United States federal agents raided Alamo's compound in Arkansas, and six girls were taken into state custody. Law enforcement officials raided Alamo's compound in Fouke, Arkansas, that's F-O-U-K-E, on Saturday, this has been a few Saturdays ago now, and removed six girls ages 10 to 17. Over 100 federal and state agents participated in the raid on the compound, which followed a two-year investigation into Alamo and his organization. Law enforcement officials were searching for evidence that minors had been videotaped performing sexual activities or had been molested. The FBI searched Alamo's property for child pornography. Alamo, who claims he is legally blind and wouldn't be able to see child pornography, preaches that girls should marry young and sex with post-puberty girls is okay because in the Bible, it happened.
Let's talk now about a story that has a lot of people staring at it. It's the story of Tony Alamo. Let me show you some pictures now. This is a raid that took place in Texarkana, Arkansas. It is where the religious facility for Tony Alamo and others in his church was raided by officials on the investigation that children may have been abused at this particular facility. And we are fortunate enough now to have Mr. Tony Alamo joining us on the phone. Mr. Alamo, thanks so much for being with us, sir.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Prosecutors are saying that you are a polygamist who preyed on married women and girls in your congregation. That's what prosecutors have said on the record. What is your response to that?
Well, even if I was a polygamist, which I'm not, what would be wrong with that when the psalmist David, Moses, and Abraham, and Solomon, and Gideon, and all those top people in the Bible, you could read about them in the 11th chapter of Hebrews, that they were polygamists as well. And
the Bible, sir, is a collection of stories, some of them to be used literally when they involve God's word, and some to be used other ways. But there were also people who were stoned in the Bible. Do you think you have the right to do that now?
Don't tell me about the Bible, man. I'm a Jew. We wrote the Bible. Let me teach you.
Okay.
You don't know anything about the Bible, okay,
all right,
friend? All right?
So you're saying the Bible gives you the right to have sex with girls?
I have the right to have sex with my wife. Is there any problem with that?
No, absolutely no problem. No problem with what?
Most people are homosexuals today, like the people of the Vatican and everything.
Yeah. Let's not go there, sir. But let's try and stick to the issue.
Let's go there. Come on now. Come on. You know there's a bunch of faggots over there, and nobody's prosecuting them.
I think most people would find that kind of language repugnant, and I would ask you not to use it anymore. Let's try and stick to the issues here.
A former member of the Alamo Ministries is speaking out about what he saw during his time in church. He accuses the church leader keeping him from his three children.
KSLA News 12, Jonathan McCall is live tonight in the studio with details on that. Jonathan?
Pat and Shannon, back in 1996, Anthony Lane says the Alamo Church kicked him out with only $10 and a bus ticket, but he left something behind that is priceless to him, his three children.
A man that arranges marriages of little girls. He orders beatings of little children.
These are only a couple of events Anthony Lane says he witnessed during his two-month stay at the Tony Alamo Ministries back in 1996 before being kicked out of the church and out of the lives of his three children he hasn't seen since.
Well, to tell you the truth, first I was just totally devastated. I felt like I'd lost any reason to live. Didn't have no reason to live. In fact, I was suicidal.
Lane was kicked out of the church after he says he questioned Alamo's teachings, and after a while, he found help and support through a group known as PACA, or Partnered Against Cult Activities.
Anyway, PACA started giving me good counsel about what steps I should take, and looking for telephone numbers and the right people that I should call.
Such as lawyers, who Lane says he's been working with to help him get custody of his kids from his wife, who is still a member of the church. But he says it's not easy.
It's very heartbreaking, but it's heartbreaking on all of them because I don't know none of my kids.
Lane says he's not sure if he will ever see his two daughters, 13-year-old Ashley and 11-year-old Sarah, ever again. But he says he won't stop trying to prevent them from becoming another victim of Tony Alamo.
It's hard to get somebody served and taken to court when they keep moving around and hiding from you deliberately.
Now Lane says he is looking into whether or not his daughters are among six girls taken from the compound during the raid this past Saturday. This afternoon, KSLA News 12 contacted Tony Alamo for a comment regarding the allegations made against him, but we were told he was unavailable. We're live tonight in the studio. Jonathan Call, KSLA News 12.
Now, I haven't followed that story closely, and I don't know which end is up or down, but it's always just a reminder that elitist perversion is all around. And so you can hit the flashback link and remember old Mark Foley and young kids, and whether it's a church they're raiding or God knows what. The interesting thing, though, in that clip, as crass as though it may have been, it's nice that he calls out the Vatican and all their abuse, which of course gets covered up quite nicely. What we're going to do now, my friends, is hit the September clearinghouse. And so this is where I put up all the things that got bookmarked and never had a chance to post them up. So we're just going to run down the headline list. This may be a tad tedious, but we're going to break it up. I am going to play some of the clips that are embedded in here. But again, use MediaMonarchy.com as your source. Again, the radio shows and podcasts are just the tip of the iceberg to entice you to get there and click the link and read it and hear it and look at it yourself. So, the September Clearinghouse, we're going to run down the list. So first, under the Selection 08 heading, we've got video, new video of POW McCain's release that surfaced, that of course is meant to boost him in the polls and show him being all tough. So that video is from the AP and also Raw Story. We've got controversy spreads over Libertarian presidential nominee Bob Barr. That's from Wikinews. Now, I probably don't have the latest on this, but it's been bubbling for many weeks now. Palin husband ordered to testify. That's from the BBC. Alaska panel okays Troopergate subpoena for Todd Palin. That's from McClatchy. Todd Palin may be subpoenaed in Troopergate investigation. That's from thinkprogress.org. Subpoenaed witness failed to show for Troopergate hearing. Again, from McClatchy. We jump to Blacklisted News and YouTube. We got a video of Sarah Palin, you know, just talking about nuclear war. Or rather, nuclear war. Apparently we can't get away from the word nuclear. God. Yahoo, AP News, Palin leaves open option of war with Russia. And again, some of these things in the news, it's like, they would be massive, but we're so inundated. Just, oh yeah, just, it's war, you know, war with Russia. No big whoop. Pro-McCain yard sign shows burning Twin Towers. That's from Raw Story. The Obama assassination plot that wasn't. That's from alexconstantine.blogspot.com. If you remember from several weeks back, this bizarre Obama assassination plot that I'm sure we'll find out with some kind of provocateur something. Woody Allen says there'll be nothing funny if Obama loses. Now, I am a Woody Allen fan, and I don't exactly expect him to be hit to the false left-right paradigm, but there you go. Brass Check TV has a video and a scary proposition or supposition or idea. President Palin basically saying she's a heartbeat away, and that heartbeat is one of an old man who could croak at any moment, thereby putting Sarah Palin as president. And hey, that would make a lot of sense, you know, the predictive programming. You remember Commander-in-Chief with Gina Davis? We just wonder who the Donald Sutherland character will be. Anyway, I'm digressing. If we jump to the caucus blog from the New York Times, Nader is drawing votes from McCain. And programming note, Ralph Nader will be in Portland, I believe, on the 20th. I'm going to try and catch a word with him. We'll see if I can pull that off. If we jump to progressnowaction.org, Council for National Policy Dominionists, who vetted Sarah Palin, again, just her strange religious right connections. Palin meets with Henry Kissinger. That should make you feel good. And of course, McCain, you know, tried to bluster that he was going to suspend his campaign until the crisis was dealt with. Which I believe then John Stewart pointed out, you said you'd suspend your campaign until the crisis was dealt with. Of course, now coming to you October 9th, the crisis is still fucking us. But he's campaigning. Liar. And you can, again, check out all these videos from Raw Replay and Raw Story and others of them back and forth. And Obama says times are too serious to put the campaign on hold. An interesting one from Slate.com, however, is a 1926 sci-fi novel that predicts a U.S. election determined by race and gender. That's an interesting one to check out. I only caught it because of some of my keyword subscriptions to find news under the word eugenics. It popped up. Finishing off the Selection 08 subheading on the September Clearinghouse, hackers planning to steal election for McCain.
Do you have any predictions for the upcoming election?
Sure.
What do you think's going to happen?
McCain Palin by 51.2% and a shocking recovery and winning by 3 electoral votes.
And do you believe that that's going to be because of force balancing?
Of course. Unless China or Israel decides they'd rather Barack, I'm not sure. I mean, they have some significant interests here. Or, frankly, you may end up in a situation like down in Florida, where you had three precincts that had, you know, in a special election they ran down there recently, only two people in the ballot, candidate A and candidate B. They had about 500 people come in and vote. One candidate got 210 votes, and one candidate got none. And so now they're sitting there in front of a judge saying, whoa, doesn't candidate B, can we assume that everybody who went in that voter booth voted for either A or B? They go, well, this is what the machine is telling us, so we have to believe it. But I don't believe it. Now, was it a programming mistake? Maybe. Was it an error? Maybe. Was it a machine failure? Maybe. Was it hacking? Maybe. We don't know. No, we can't know.
It's a guy named Spoonamore talking about vote fraud and basically saying it's going to be a McCain-Palin victory, 51.2%, thanks to vote fraud. So you can watch that whole clip, hackers planning to steal election for McCain. Now we're going to jump to Police State USA, and the first one is Einstein replaces Big Brother in internet surveillance. That's from the peoplesvoice.org. From our own Oregonian, OregonLive.com, man threatens suit over seizure of video camera after he tapes Portland police rousting two men. And so that's a guy named Joe Anybody. He's got a blog, and he's got a seized camera. And I believe he was actually on Outside the Box with Alex Ansari recently. We've also got Dallas to increase number of surveillance cameras. That's from NBC5i.com, and there is a video to go along with that. But we're not going to check out that one. We're going to check out this one. Not exactly involved with the police state, but it fits nonetheless because it's about an assassination, a political assassination of character. It's the assassination of Elliot Spitzer.
You just heard the complete text of the editorial Elliot Spitzer wrote that appeared in the Washington Post 3 weeks before he was assassinated politically. Though his language was measured, his meaning was clear. He accused the Bush administration in a public forum of deliberately and aggressively colluding with predatory banks to prevent states from enforcing their own time-proven banking laws. Why? Why did the Bush administration do this? They did this to assist banks and other lenders in engaging in reckless and predatory lending practices that now threaten the very stability of our credit system and our economy. Less than a month after this editorial appeared, Elliot Spitzer was assassinated, not by bullets, but by an FBI investigation that leaked alleged details of his private life to the news media, and the news media to the rest. So-called sexual misconduct is a fact of political life. For example, until he was exposed by an alert journalist, homosexual escort James Gugart made over 200 visits to the Bush White House, including what appears to have been at least two overnight stays. Yet this fact, verified by the Secret Service's own visitor logs, never made it to the front page of any newspaper. In contrast, what should have been a sealed investigative notebook in the Spitzer case was released and reported widely. Brass Check TV calls upon the governors of the 50 states of the Union to show courage on the issue of predatory lending and demand it be brought to public light. Facts are clear. The Bush administration engaged in an unprecedented campaign to dismantle the system of laws that defend consumers from predatory lending practices. In doing so, they've created misery for millions of Americans, thrown our financial system into chaos, and weakened the nation's economy, all for the sake of a quick buck.
Now, what I should have told you first was to check out Elliot Spitzer's suicide note, or basically his scathing article, Predatory Lenders Partner in Crime. And again, you can check out that full video from Brass Check TV. And the other thing is, I know exactly now how it fits into Police State USA, because the way that they were able to bust out this supposed sex was because they were wiretapping his ass. NSA, baby. If we move on now, U.S. schools pay classroom informants. That's from the BBC. JetBlue reopened JFK terminal after a grenade scare. That's from KARE11.com. Basically, some antique grenades went through and everybody wigged the fuck out. Oh my God. a few different clips and a few different links and a few different interviews with Jim Mars about not only his new book, Rise of the Fourth Reich, but also about the bailout and just basically the Wall Street Nazis that have been with us since about 1947.
Interestingly enough, this was in direct contradiction to the policies of President Truman and Eisenhower, who said they would not allow any Nazis in our government, but they were whitewashed by John J. McCloy's protege, Alan Dulles, who was head of the CIA at the time, and their backgrounds were changed from ardent Nazi to not ardent Nazi.
Yeah.
And they brought them all in, they rolled them in, and they have been pushing National Socialism in this country ever since. But, of course, they couldn't do it under the name National Socialism, because anybody knew anything knew that that was the Nazis. So they changed the terminology, and they called themselves neoconservatives. And that's what we see today, and they're doing the same thing. They are simply bailing out the banks and the financiers and the very same people who have created this financial debacle. And I think it's just unconscionable. I think that as individual Americans, if we run over somebody in our car, we are held personally responsible. And if these people who let these subprime mortgages and who dealt with these derivatives, which is just sleight of hand paperwork, and if they got in trouble, then I'm sorry, they should just be held responsible and they should take it on the chin. I don't see why they should throw good tax money after bad. In fact, what would be, I think, a straightforward, equitable plan is to take the $700 billion bailout and let's have the American taxpayer bail out. Let's just apportion that out to the approximately 200 million Americans over the age of 18, women, men, everybody, and we'd all end up with about, I don't know, $3.5, $4 million each. And look what we could do with that, Ian. We could pay off our mortgages, and we could pay off student loans, and we could go out and buy new cars, we could pump up industry, we could get the whole economy just going and blowing again. Of course, we'd pay taxes on it, which would be an additional $200 million in or whatever for taxes. So it could all be handled without bailing out the very people who've created this situation.
So that's Jim Mars on Coast to Coast, but there's also a nice long interview with him on Alex Jones Show as well. Moving on, under Police State USA in the September Clearinghouse, Army to Build Minority Report Fast Iris Scan, that's from therawfeed.com. Spies warn that Alcieta aims for October surprise, newyorksun.com. We, of course, have the Amy Goodman Democracy Now! Clip talking about the military initiating the martial law missions October 1st. U.S. troops in homeland crowd control patrols from October 1st. Why is a U.S. Army brigade being assigned to the homeland? That's from Glenn Greenwald over at Salon. From the San Francisco Guardian, feds give custom agents free hand to seize travelers' documents. The New York Times has a scary article with scary photos of stormtroopers and dogs and AKs and whatever God knows kind of guns they have. An exercise in security at 150 railroad stations. We've also got a pandemic flu exercise in Illinois. That's from BND.com. U.S. Homeland Security to utilize physiological screeners to pinpoint terrorists. That's from AllHeadlineNews.com. Exercise tests border readiness. That's from the Calgary Herald. Police may stop responding to some crimes. Local6.com has that, I believe, as well as a video. And again, basically the same idea, saying, you know, when emergencies happen, you know, basically the old people and infirm, we're just going to let them die. They're now, you know, crimes that they won't show up for. One from DailyDoseOfTerror.blogspot.com. Cubic Corp. NYC WMD disaster scenario, and that is a frightening one, as there also been some other sort of World War III war games, and we'll get to that in a second. But Senate passes a bill creating a copyright czar. That is from Threat Level, as well as the follow-up, Copyright Czar's Fate in Bush's Hands. Veto looms, again, just creating another czar to head something that doesn't need the government's hand in it in the first fucking place anyway. Documents reveal massive DHS border spying operations. That's from Anti-Fascist Calling. Now, of course, all the hubbub in the last week or so, again, all tied in with the bailout and the economic New World Order, as well as the combat brigades from October 1st, we have Representative Burgess saying Congress was under martial law to pass the banker bailout bill, and we also have Representative Marcy Kaptur warning that there are domestic enemies to the Republic.
Mr. Speaker, I also come to the floor today to talk about this $100 billion bill that's in front of us. I use the term bill advisedly because we have seen no bill. We are here debating talking points on perhaps what is one of the most largest, the largest fundamental change in our nation's financial system in its history. And House Republicans have been cut out of the process. Not only have we been cut out of the process, we've also been derided by the leadership of the Democratic Party and called unpatriot for not participating. Mr. Speaker, I have been thrown out of more meetings in this Capitol in the last 24 hours than I ever thought possible as a duly elected representative of 820,000 citizens of North Texas. Mr. Speaker, politics is a full contact sport, and I understand that, but it is a full contact sport in the light of day in the public arena. Since we didn't have hearings, since we didn't have markup, let's at least put this legislation up on the internet for 24 hours. That's what Thomas was made for. Let's do that and let the American people see what we have done in the dark of night. After all, I have not gotten any more mail, any more emails on any other subject than this one that is before us today. Mr. Speaker, I understand we're under martial law, as declared by the Speaker last night. I think it's ironic. House Republicans have not been needed for a single thing in this House to assure passage for the last 22 months. And today, we're going to be asked to vote for a bill for political cover because Democrats are too weak to stand up to their Speaker. I yield back.
Mr. Speaker, my message to the American people, don't let Congress seal this Wall Street deal. High financial crimes have been committed. Now Congress is being asked to bail out the culprits and to do so at the expense of those who elected us to guard their interests, the people of our country. The normal legislative process that should accompany review of a monumental proposal to bail out Wall Street has been shelved. Yes, shelved. Only a few insiders are doing the dealing. Sounds like insider trading to me. These criminals have so much political power they can shut down the normal legislative process of the highest lawmaking body in this land. All the committees that should be scanning every word of what is being negotiated are benched. And that means the American people are benched too. We are constitutionally sworn to protect and defend this republic against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And my friends, there are enemies. We are told we will have a bill, a $1 trillion bill to review soon, and have less than 24 hours with no regular hearings to try to vote on this tar baby. The people pushing this deal are the very same ones who were responsible for the implosion on Wall Street. They were fraudulent then, and they're fraudulent now. We should say no to this deal. I asked my colleague to join us at 2 o'clock in HCA to the Capitol to meet with some real experts who've done financial resolutions without putting the burden on the taxpayer. Please join us HCA at 2 p.m.
Now, again, that was Marcy Kaptur, and before her was Representative Burgess. There's another one from truthnews.us, Congresswoman Kaptur, criminal insiders behind the bailout bill. Now, something to point out, and fortunately, again, saying things that need to be said, Lee Rogers at roguegovernment.com, martial law hysteria taken out of context. And what he basically points out, what you just heard Burgess say, he is referring to parliamentary sort of procedures and not stormtroopers on the street. Now, however, a few days later, I believe there was a guy named Brad Sherman who did say, no, seriously, martial law on the streets if this doesn't go through. So again, they said, pass the bailout and everything will be okay, and then things got even worse, so they're going to ask for more, and we'll give them more because they're the vampire. They're asking, and we'll... Or rather, no, they're not asking. They wait for us to beg them. That's going to be the way it's going to go down. They're not going to just bust out and bust down doors. They're going to wait till we beg them. Please have the military on the streets. But again, as I just mentioned a moment ago, the war games. This coming from WalesOnline.co.uk. World War III drills, codenamed Joint Warrior. And so you can check those out. And on a completely different note, but not exactly, it's all the private military-industrial complex, but again, selling it back to you. Again, you love it. Army's deal with Sears has some seeing red, basically the military selling clothes with a big red one insignia on some clothing. Now, what I didn't have posted up yet is, I forget which store, it's Macy's, I believe, selling a bunch of clothes that have Illuminati Knights and bloodlines of Illuminati and Bohemian Grove and all kinds of stuff for your cool kids to wear. Propaganda. One way or another, here's another way of propaganda, and it's obsession.
Number one, GOT. That'd be Grand Old Terrorism Party, founded by George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. And if you think this country's disgust with counterterrorism being used as, well, terrorism against voting Americans has sunk in with the Republicans, you'd be wrong. They are polluting the nation with more neocon pornography today. Hundreds of thousands of copies of a DVD have been or will be distributed as paid-for advertising supplements in newspapers in 14 swing voting states from Florida to New Mexico. The disc is of a lunatic fringe right-wing film called Obsession, Radical Islam's War Against the West. It was originally shown on, where else, Fox News in 2006. A year later, it was screened on college campuses by David Horowitz, the hysteric and faker. In it, scenes of Muslim children are intercut with Nazi rallies. The organization behind Hate DVD has endorsed Senator McCain. Also from outside the McCain campaign event in Jacksonville, Florida today, you're seeing it, a sign in the yard called, created by a group called the Ronald Reagan Republican Assembly of Central Florida. It really is a McCain Palin sign, complete with an image of the World Trade Center exploding and the message "Keep America Safe." So keep that message in mind whenever you think of Senator McCain or Governor Palin, won't you? Remind yourself that when we were attacked, the government that let us down was Republican, and that their new candidate has a secret plan to capture the guy who masterminded 9/11, but he won't tell anybody about it till we elect him president. What, that isn't the point of the new ad? Wow, they're going to need a new ad.
So that's a little bit about Obsession, that DVD that's getting all the chatter that was sent out. Now, of course, Olbermann, being the good left Democrat that he is, left-right paradigm trap, he pins it all. It's all Bush and Cheney. It's all them. They made all this shit up. It's not a part of some plan that's been going on for the last 75 to 100 years in this country, at least by their fathers. It's all Bush and Cheney. And Obama will make everything okay, right? Ex-CIA official Dusty Fargo pleads guilty to fraud. That's from the Washington Post. Euroknet has a timeline of U.S. policy disasters. The Washington Post has software lets users manipulate passport data. Raw Story has a bill would ban suspicionless laptop searches. So some slight ray of good news bursting through. Again, Daily Dose of Terror has a bit on directed energy weapons and the active denial systems that, of course, will come along with the combat brigades when they roll out. But if we jump now to the EnviroHealth setting, officials say Texas lab with dangerous pathogens secured. This basically ties in to Hurricane Ike from several weeks ago. But there's also an article about the media blackout on the west side of Galveston. That's from worldproudassembly.org. And again, the Texas lab with dangerous pathogens secured is from CNN. So again, there's all these labs, and of course, we'll find out later that, whoops, something accidentally escaped that we created. There's one about the Air Force spraying mosquitoes, and again, just throwing it in your face that they are spraying. But if we hit the Washington Post, FDA proposes regulation for genetically engineered animals, physorg.com, and we have a few of these, and of course, this is a large story, and I'm not doing it justice, but, you know, 13,000 infants hospitalized due to tainted milk with melamine in it. Contaminated baby's milk induces wave of child illness in China. That's from Wikinews. We've also got animals sick from Chinese milk. That's from the BBC. But if we hit naturalnews.com, media cries foul when county stops fluoridating water. And if we hit the independent.co.uk, mobile phone use raises children's risk of brain cancer fivefold. But WikiNews says otherwise. Media reports exaggerate cell phone risks again. But on a lighter note, but again, it ties in with this kind of bizarre new, I don't know what it is. But anyway, PETA's asking Ben and Jerry's to use human breast milk in their ice cream. So there's a couple links there, WPTZ.com. You can watch a video and see more about that also on YouTube. ArmyTimes.com has one about the Army investigating possible chemical exposure. Officials urge more Americans to get flu shots. This from the MercuryNews.com, appropriately enough, because there's lots of mercury in the shots. Heart disease and diabetes linked to plastics. That's up on Yahoo. And British water might be laced with drugs. From Telegraph.co.uk. If we hit up some new JFK news, there's a new documentary featuring JFK's connection to Hyannisport. That's coming from BarnesStablePatriot.com, but we've also got one from CapeCodOnline.com, JFK's Sacred Ground. More importantly, from ExistentialistCowboy.com, 3 reasons JFK was murdered. And can you guess what they would be? Pretty much all about money and CIA. And war. And finally, from SMUDailyCampus.com, JFK's murdered solved by SMU physics. And that's Southern Methodist University. But if we hit up some media from the peoplesvoice.org, messing with the Zohan, that was, of course, the recent Adam Sandler pro-IDF Israeli stormtrooper movie. And if you hit up Preserve D Word, or rather PreservedWord.com, I Am Legend and the Depopulation Agenda. And if you hit up Military.com, they have an article on Spike Lee's new World War II film causing an uproar in Italy. But now if we shift to some Ron Paul news... Ron Paul's presidential endorsement, for real this time, from Reason.com. Ron Paul endorses Constitution Party nominee Chuck Baldwin for president, who, again, as a programming note, I believe will be here in Portland the day after Ralph Nader. I believe Baldwin will be here October 21st. So keep an eye peeled, see if we can cover that. We've also got videos of Ron Paul on Fox, I believe on Neil Cavuto, and also talking about the failed bailout vote before, of course, it passed later. But again, Ron Paul endorsed Chuck Baldwin, and I want to feel like the only reason he did it is because Bob Barr blew him off and didn't come to the third-party unity press conference at the National Press Club. I don't exactly know all that much about Chuck Baldwin. I think he's pretty much a truther, but I think he's also perhaps a pastor. So, I don't know. He's not someone I'm probably going to throw a whole lot of support behind at this point. But let's jump now. Keep moving, my friends. Looking at a little history mystery. Manchurian Candidate cover story for American mind control experimentation. U.S. POWs during the Korean War. Coming from, of course, alexconstantine.blogspot.com. Witness changed her story during Rosenberg spy case. That's from the Washington Post. The Huffington Post and Peter Kornbluh has an article 35 years after the original 9/11. New transcripts of Kissinger's role in Chilean coup. Remember, September 11th, 1973. Pinochet Allende. If we hit Granma, GRANMA.CU, U.S. aid, key weapon in dirty war on Latin America. Now, an interesting one, before we hit up the last couple things in history mystery about Nazis and Coca-Cola and corporations, let's do a little flashback. This seems a lot older than it is, but we're going back to 1994 to The Donahue Show, American Militia Media Spin.
The United States of America, they believe that the United States government is prepared to usurp the Constitution and break down doors and confiscate guns. Am I lying to these people, Bob Fletcher and Jim Truckman?
John Truckman.
John, sorry, it says John here. You believe this?
No, not quite like that. Not the U.S. government.
Which government? The one world government?
Yes, sir.
You, the United Nations?
Yes, sir.
And you're in the woods now, and you're not, neither of you, you're not in the woods?
No, no, no.
Yeah, you're from Montana, the city of Knoxon?
Yes, sir, the little town of Knoxon.
350 people?
Maximum.
Uh-huh. And you living in the woods?
No.
No, you're not. Is anybody in Montana?
Just the Clean Holmes.
You're sitting next to Ray Southwell, who does, from Michigan. You gather in the woods, don't you? In Michigan?
When we train?
Yeah.
That's correct.
But you're not living there.
I don't quite understand when you say living there. I live in northern Michigan, and I have 20 acres that I live on, and there's a house there.
Right. You're with Ken Adams and Doug Hall here, as well as the ever-popular, highly regarded Jim Johnson. You're from Ohio, are you?
That's correct. Columbus, to be exact.
Yeah. You're in the militia, are you?
The Ohio Unorganized Militia, the duly elected communications officer.
Yeah. What do you, incidentally, I thought this was a all-white Aryan Nation, don't tread on me kind of group.
Yeah, well, the Saving the Country doesn't have an affirmative action program. All are invited.
And you're here, among other things, to say that you share their concern about the pending crisis that's coming to this country?
Oh, absolutely. Being a minority in our community, we've seen certain actions that these conspiratorial theorists have talked about actually happen in our communities.
Yeah, tell us what they are. I'm having a little trouble getting it from the civilians here.
Well,
you look like you're from IBM compared to the rest of the
group. Yes, so.
We can spot you from the air, Bob. You better get yourself your fatigues here.
I'm going to get spotted from the air.
Yes, you are. You're serious about this. Please, I want this audience to know. Well, show them the film. This is from Michigan. Let me just, while we're showing them, you can make your case.
The basic problem is rather simple, and Americans have become concerned that here in the United States, we're losing our constitutional rights. We are slowly being moved into what amounts to being a one world, and that's George Bush and Gorbachev's words, a one world, new world order.
A one world, new world order. And again, those sound like they're so much older than they are. Those are just from 1994, and that's just a couple minutes from a bunch of Donahue clips that somebody thankfully captured from their old VHS tapes. It's always nice to see that on YouTube, and you can see the old VHS lines, and I dig it. Nostalgia for VHS. But again, what's important to point out is that they're trying to paint these guys as nut jobs. But now we can see that pretty much everything they're talking about is in our face right now, and not many people could deny that. The last couple things under the history mystery heading, Nazi-linked corporations paying the piper, reaping the returns. That's from resourceinvestor.com. And then finally, Coca-Cola and the Nazis. British comedian publicizes Coke's Nazi past. That's from xroads.virginia.edu. Now if we jump to the geopolitics subheading, Shanghai Cooperation Organization starts anti-terror drill in Russia. That's from turkishweekly.net. Russian nuclear warship and Venezuela war games from Daily Dose of Terror. Kim Jong-il may have suffered a stroke, Intel officials says. That's from Raw Story. Kim's death could destabilize North Korea. That's from thenationalpost.com. No one convicted of terror plot to bomb planes. That's from the New York Times. Liquid bomb terror plot collapses in court. That's from InfoWars. And again, all of these cases crumble in court. But they'll still make old ladies dump out their water, and they'll still make you take off your shoes, because it's not about safety, it's about control. If we hit up the Israel tip, Israeli hacker known as the Analyzer, suspected of hacking again. That's from Threat Level, and of course the Analyzer looks like the Analyzer. Israeli police want Olmert indicted, which of course he has stepped down. That's from military.com. Olmert to resign as Israeli prime minister. That's from Time. Livni wins party vote to succeed Olmert in Israel. And there's a video up on YouTube. It's just the straight BBC video about Livni taking over as new prime minister. However, someone fortunately adds lots of pertinent information and lets you know that terrorist daughter is the new Israeli prime minister. Israel asked U.S. for green light to bomb nuclear sites in Iran. That's from The Guardian. Again, Bob Baer, and we're going to hear more from him tomorrow on episode 95. Bet on Israel bombing Iran. That's posted up on the NewYorkDailyNews.com. Ukraine's government fell apart. That's from the BBC. And there's a video in the news report about Ukraine's government collapsing. And that's, of course, the color revolution over there in Yushchenko. The poisoned Yushchenko. Blair goes back to school as a Yale religion professor. So, of course, going to the home of Skull and Bones to teach religion of the New World Order. That's up on Yahoo News from the AFP. U.S. warns of punitive measures against Russia. That's from Reuters. Australia planning mass surveillance system. China false flag, SAIC, FCS, Stratcom, and more from Daily Dose of Terror. A scary one from The Telegraph. Russian nuke bomber flies within 90 seconds of the UK. And then finally, under the geopolitics heading, Pentagon's new AFRICOM raises suspicions about U.S. motives. That's from McClatchy. And again, about NORTHCOM, SOUTHCOM, CENTCOM, AFRICOM. It's the GWAT. But the last little bit and the last little heading under September Clearinghouse is all about the money. Calls for a global monetary authority. That's from the Financial Times, FT.com. The U.S. Mint suspends sale of 24-karat gold coins. That's from the Associated Press. No bailout for Wall Street. That's an editorial from the aforementioned Chuck Baldwin. That's up on AmericanFreePress.net. There's a video about how the markets really work, and it's going back to way back to 2007 from BrassCheckTV.com. There's an important article from WSWS.org, Who is Henry Paulson? Bailout failure will cause U.S. crash. Again, that was all the fear-mongering and threataganda. Protests on Wall Street. Now, there is a shit ton of videos that got zero coverage, but there's a bunch of them posted up on hubpages.com. Protests on Wall Street, what the news media isn't showing you. The Associated Press also has UK government nationalizes Bradford and Bingley. A global financial system, question mark? Wilson Rev Unplugged.blogspot.com. We, of course, had the Dow dropping 770 points, or rather, 777 points. That was two Mondays ago, after the bailout package failed initially, I believe. Now I've lost track. But it was interesting to see, of course, 777 blaze big time across the headlines. Jon Stewart in The Daily Show, 1929 was for pussies, and that's posted up on Raw Replay. And then finally, during the bailout hullabaloo, and of course, you know, 99% of Americans completely against it and let their voice be heard. If only they would do that way more often, we might get some shit changed. But this is a funny note, and coming from threat level, the House websites crumbled under the weight of complaints. Basically, so many people were logging on to send messages and to send emails to their House of Representatives reps that the websites were crippled by it. And that's what we need more of, my friends. So, thanks for joining me for this extra B-side episode 94B of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, giving you all the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, and it's all up on MediaMonarchy.com. So, like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
I mean, it's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Same. Out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
Yo. This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.